This is the Celebration Rock Podcast presented by 93XFM here in Minneapolis and uprocks.com. I am your host, Stephen Hayden. My guest today is Courtney Barnett. This is her second time on the podcast. That makes her officially a friend of the pod, which makes me very happy because Courtney Barnett, of course, is one of the great singer-songwriters working in rock today. Her latest record came out a couple of months ago or so. It's called Tell Me How You Really Feel. It's a really great record. And she's already built a nice career. She has, I guess, two proper studio albums, and then she had those two EPs that came out and were sort of packaged into one record. And it's always interesting talking to Courtney because when you listen to her songs, you know, she has such a warm conversational voice to her. You know, you feel like you know her, and she's writing about things from her life in a very sort of sometimes funny way, sometimes you know, very direct and even emotional way, especially on the latest record. But when you talk to Courtney in person, and of course this is true for me, I guess, because I'm a member of the press, or in this case I'm a podcaster shoving a microphone in her face, in those situations she tends to be a little guarded, you know, a little reticent, you know, reluctant to divulge too much. And I think you'll find that in this podcast. You know, I feel like we had a good conversation. You know, we were hanging out on her tour bus. She was recently in the area where I am. I'm in the Twin Cities in Minnesota. She was in the area, and we hung out for about 40, 45 minutes before her show. And she's very warm, very welcoming. But, you know, there's a little bit of a little bit of reluctance to reveal too much, you know, keeping you at arm's length a little bit. And I think I understand why. I mean, especially in the last couple years with Courtney Barnett, she has really become a pretty big indie star. You know, like when I previously interviewed her for the podcast, she was playing at First Avenue here in the Twin Cities. She played two sold-out shows at that time. And then when I met up with her again, she was headlining this huge show in a big field with Julian Baker and Lucy Dacus were the supporting acts. And she had just come off of a big performance at the Pitchfork Festival. So you can definitely see the trajectory that she is on. And of course, she was at the Grammys a couple years ago. She was nominated for Best New Artist. And of course, lost to Meghan Trainor because the Grammys are terrible and we shouldn't ever talk about them, but I'm just putting it in there as, you know, sort of a resume item for her. So she's on the way to becoming a big star, and I think on the latest record, and this is just me maybe projecting onto it, but I feel like there's some weariness about that, maybe a little bit of exhaustion about being in the spotlight. And we talk about this in the podcast about just her feelings about where she's at in her career right now, and her response is interesting because on one hand, she sort of dismissed my suggestion that maybe she's feeling a little burned out. But then she kind of implied that maybe I was onto something at the same time. So I'm not sure what to think, really, but I guess you guys should just listen to it and draw your own conclusions. Either way, you know, Courtney Barnett, again, is someone that I really respect, someone I think who makes great records. In my book, Twilight of the Gods, A Journey to the End of Classic Rock, and that is what we call a plug, Derek. Did you like that segue?
That was good, yeah.
To self-promotion, I was talking about Courtney, and then I started talking about myself. But anyway, in that book, I said Courtney is the best writer of rock songs currently on the planet, and I'll stand behind that. You know, there might be a couple people that I would say are co-best, maybe in that regard, but she's doing great work right now. I think she's on a real roll. And I feel happy that I got to talk to her and sort of capturing this moment in time in her career. So before we get to that, I want to tell you about our sponsor for this week. And it is our old friends at Blue Apron. Now, if you listen to podcasts at all, you already know about Blue Apron. You know that they deliver farm fresh ingredients and step-by-step recipes to your door. It's their mission to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone. And they achieve this by supporting a more sustainable food system, setting the highest standards for ingredients, and building a community of home chefs. Now, if you haven't tried Blue Apron, and you're still not totally sure what it is, I mean, the reason you want to get on this is because they're going to give you quick and easy recipe options. I mean, we're talking about perfectly portioned ingredients delivered right to your door. They're going to make your dinner quick, easy, and very tasty because they're giving you this like farm fresh stuff that you have to go to the market to get. And they're also going to tell you how to make it. So we're talking about really tasty things like chicken with barbecue sauce and juicy cheeseburgers and with spicy slaw and all this great stuff that you can make easily for yourself and for your family. To check out this week's menu and get your first three meals for free at blueapron.com/celebration, you just want to go to that website. It's blueapron.com/celebration to get your first three meals for free. And of course, I have tried Blue Apron myself in the past, and it's a great way to go. Blue Apron makes it easy and very delicious for you. So again, the special deal just for my listeners, if you go to blueapron.com/celebration, you get your first three meals for free. So go check that out, and you will also help out the podcast as well. Okay, so me and Courtney Barnett, we chatted, I guess it was last weekend, and it was a great time. So why don't we get down to it? Here is me and Courtney Barnett talking on the Celebration Rock podcast. So thanks for letting me come on your tour bus.
No worries. It's probably the quietest place.
So, like, how long have you been, like, at the tour bus level? Have you been able to tour this way for a while, or is this, like, a recent thing?
Last year or so? I don't even know. But not, yeah. I think it just, at a certain point, it makes more sense.
Yeah.
Money-wise, hotels and planes and...
I mean, is it like a game changer for touring? Is it like more enjoyable now, or are there other issues you have to deal with?
I quite like it. Kind of, you know, have a little space and go to bed and wake up in the place and don't have to spend hours at airports. It's
right.
Kind of good.
So whenever I interview people before a show, well, first of all, like, how long have you been here already? Like, just waiting around to go on tonight? Like, did you get here, like, this morning?
Oh, yeah, well, I guess I think we parked at, like, 7 a.m., and then I had to go and do a radio thing at 11, so
okay.
I was up at 10.
So, like, if you weren't talking to me right now, like, would you be napping? Would you be, like, watching Netflix? Like, what would you be doing right now if you
I don't know. Sitting in the sun, reading my book, hanging out, playing guitar, writing... I got a bunch of postcards to write. I don't know. I'm sure. I mean, there's always something to do.
I see postcards. That's like a really old-fashioned way of communicating. Is that like a fun way to keep up with people?
I'm old-fashioned.
Yeah. There's like, do you prefer that to like email and text and all that stuff?
Yeah, I hate all that stuff. It just takes me a long time as well to like communicate. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you were at Pitchfork yesterday.
Yeah.
So, like, because I wasn't there.
Okay.
Usually I'm there. So, like, it sucked, right? Can you tell me it was bad? I don't want to feel like I missed anything.
Oh, did
you have a good time?
I can't lie. I had a really good time. It was we did the festival a couple of years ago, and maybe 3 years ago, and I remember that was one of my favorite shows I'd ever done.
Okay.
And then this one was pretty close to, again... Just to really, everyone's in such a like great mood there.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was kind of that. The rain was like imminent all day, and it was a good vibe.
Yeah. So like, with festivals generally, do you have a good time, or can that be pretty hit or miss?
I mean, everything's hit and miss, I guess, in a way. But
yeah.
I mean, it's. You know, there's so many factors. I think it's like your own headspace versus like thousands of people's headspace, or heat, or rain, or like whatever. You know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's always pretty good. It's always pretty great to stand on a stage and sing songs to anyone.
I mean, like in terms of like the backstage area, I just imagine it being like summer camp, because you probably see a lot of the same artists at different festivals, and I know like. When you did the Kurt Vile record, you talked about how like you and Kurt kind of got to know each other because you were playing festivals together. I mean, do you get to meet a lot of friends that way? And do you also have the opposite where you have like rivals where you're like, oh, that person? And you don't have to name names, but they're like, oh, God, not this person again.
I don't think I'm really a rival person, but we definitely made lots of friends that way. Like, guess people kind of end up slightly on the same circuit thing, you know, depending on when their album is out. And there's a whole bunch of bands that that we kind of followed around on the last album tour, like I guess Kurt was one, and Shamir, Mac DeMarco, Angel Olsen, like just these really great artists that we got to kind of you know, do a lot of the same festivals and just kind of get to know, you know, like I'm kind of shy-ish, but it's nice to kind of be in an environment where, you know, everyone's pretty easygoing and, you know, also respecting people's space. Like, you don't, everyone doesn't want to talk to everyone all the time. So, I don't really have any rival people. I mean, it's just like people, like sometimes.
Well, this is your opportunity. You could start something right now. Be like, oh yeah, this person. You're awful.
I think just sometimes like people are rude and disrespectful, but normally, you know, I don't know. I think most people figure out that that's kind of no way to be, and don't really get very far if you're disrespectful to other, I don't know, crew or other artists.
Well, yeah, it seems like there's probably, it's a small world in a lot of ways. So if you are that kind of person, the word gets out.
Yeah. For sure.
And you said that a lot of times you're just kind of hanging out, reading a book, writing postcards. Like, what are you reading right now?
I'm reading this book called The Prophet, and then I got given a new Murakami book. I forget what it's called. Well, it's not new. It's new to me, but it's one I haven't read.
I mean, do you like fly through books on tour?
Sometimes. Not really. I get distracted really easily. There's always things happening. So, I wish I did.
I mean, do you feel like that influences you as a writer yourself? Like, if you're reading a lot of stuff?
Yeah.
Do you feel like you write a lot in, like, after reading?
Yeah, I think in different ways it definitely kind of opens your mind a bit to different ideas and different worlds.
Yeah. Yeah, the last time I saw you, we talked when you played at First Avenue. You played two shows there, and I think that was like 2016, I think. Mm-hmm. And you were, I don't know if you had started working on the new record or if you were just sort of thinking about it at that point, but I think you said something about how you feel like when it comes to starting songs that you're lazy, which I think you're being self-deprecating because you seem like a pretty prolific artist, you know, especially, you know, you had the a lot of sea lice last year, and then of course this record.
Yeah.
But I know you've said, like, in other interviews, talking about this new record, that when you were first getting started, that you weren't in the best headspace necessarily at that time. What was on your mind then that maybe made it difficult to get started?
I think I always. I mean, I don't think I'm. Yeah. Who knows what I say and what I mean when I say it. I never know. I think, you know, my mood changes so much, but...
Yeah. Well, you know, we're holding you to this. You know, you're on your oath.
Yeah, I think sometimes it's just kind of ever-changing, I think. And, I mean, I'm a very kind of inquisitive and... never really like completely satisfied or I don't know. Yeah, I've you know, accomplished some great things I'm really proud of. I think it's just like there's always more to do, you know. There's always more to learn and more to know and more to be kind of explored. So I think it's just that balance between sometimes I feel like I don't do enough, but then you know, it's just kind of being kind to yourself and feeling like you've done all right. Keep on going, and you've got plenty of time to you know, do more.
So you feel like it's more you being hard on yourself, or like a crisis of confidence?
And I think it fluctuates, you know, with probably everyone kind of experiences it in different ways, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, when I listened to the record, or like when I first started, I heard it for the first time, one thing that jumped out at me was it seemed like in a lot of songs you were talking about being on the road. and it kind of reminded me of like that song, An Illustration of Loneliness, the vibe of that song. Yeah. I can think of a song like City Looks Pretty, which is like one of my favorite songs on the record, and that seems like a song sort of directly inspired by touring. It, like, there's that great line in the song where you like, I'm paraphrasing, but it's something like, you know, like strangers, like friends seem like strangers and strangers treat you like they're their best friend, which seems like a great sort of summation of what it's like to become famous or well-known.
Yeah.
I mean, am I reading too much into that, or do you feel like that was something that you were thinking about when you were writing these songs?
Well, yeah, of course I was kind of, you know, I guess of course I was thinking about it because it's where I'd been the last couple of years. I think it's going to be hard for anyone to, you know, the story that seems to be existing around me is of that, like, I think it's hard for people to listen to these songs without that kind of preconception and that that kind of projected idea, which is fine. I think that that's just what happens, and when you paint a picture of someone in your mind, then that's how you kind of interpret those words and those songs. So really, I mean, you know, there's never a wrong answer, I think, when it comes to interpreting lyrics. I mean, I wrote half of that song in my early 20s, so before I'd been touring.
Oh, right.
Which,
so I'm completely wrong.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong. I think, it's completely relevant to the touring life as well, but, you know, half of the meaning of that song is just disconnection. It's just disconnection from the people around you.
Right.
And I wrote it at a time when I was really depressed and would kind of walk around the city at night and, I felt like I had more meaningful encounters with total strangers than the people that I was close to in my life.
Right.
So, I mean, that's one side of the story, and then it's kind of in two parts almost, that song, so... I mean, they both make total sense to me.
Yeah.
But I guess it is. It's all just that idea of connection. How we all kind of make our own story of these things, anyway. So yeah, it makes sense.
I mean, do you feel like you're in that situation a lot when you're being interviewed? That like the person's projecting something onto you, and you have to try to explain it away or confirm or deny what they're saying about you? Is that a weird thing? Do you feel like you find that a lot?
I mean, it depends on the day. I don't think, you know, anyone needs to, you know, I don't feel the need to always have to explain or justify. I think that, you know, just is the role of an artist, is that you make something and then people, that's what people do. They're always going to, and I'm not the kind of person who wants to, 100% explain every single element of what I do, because I don't think it's necessary. I think half of the point of art is that kind of interpretation and projection. That's fine, even though I guess sometimes it's frustrating, or it can be.
Well, yeah.
But letting go of that and just being like, well, once I've released this song, it doesn't belong to me anymore, and you can just make up your mind about it.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine you write a song and you want people to feel like you're talking about their own life, and they're going to apply it to, like if they listen to See It Looks Pretty, they can hear it and say, like, this reminds me of when I was depressed, like the disconnection that I felt with people. Mm. But it's got to be different, though, when people are, you know, just like what I did, I kind of made an assumption about your life based on something you wrote. And that's a little bit different than the other thing. And I would imagine that the latter is maybe more annoying or problematic, maybe, for you. Like, if someone's sort of looking at your songs and going like, oh, she's thinking this based on how I heard this song.
I don't know. It's a funny, I think the thing I've learned, or the thing I've kind of recognized in myself is, you know, the more defensive we get about things, probably, you know, shows the more kind of deeper they hit. So if I do get really frustrated or defensive about something, it's probably for a reason. So just trying to kind of recognize that and be like, oh, why would that upset me so much that I think that someone thinks they know everything about me or whatever, I think we all just have our own things to figure out.
Let me, ask what I was kind of going for, or kind of hinting at a couple minutes ago, like in a different way. Like, do you ever feel, you started out in this indie world making records. I'm sure that what you've already achieved in your career is beyond whatever expectations or hopes you had when you got started. Is there ever a point where it seems like it's going too fast, or where you're like, I don't need it to be any bigger than this? Like, has that ever entered your mind?
I think I've kind of intentionally kept it pretty low-key along the way, and I think I have a great manager who I've worked with since before I made my first recording, my first EP, like in my early 20s, and I mean, you know, he's a dear friend, and he'd worked in other music stuff but not managing people, so we both kind of came at it from this fresh, and I was really anti-management or like anti-music industry. I just had this really, you know, that kind of devilish view of what it was, and so I think I've always been not 100% skeptical, but had that little bone in my body. So you know, we always kind of try to work around the maybe the more typical framework of stuff in our own way. I think that's the thing, like music is so, or just the whole kind of arts industry, there's kind of almost there's a kind of way that people do things, but everyone is so different. Everyone has different morals and different, you know, ideas of success and goals that they even care about. So I think that's nice. Like, there's no one that really does anything exactly the same way. So we've kind of found our way, my way, which I kind of like to skirt around the edges of maybe what would be completely normal. But I don't know. I think it's kind of always a learning curve.
Right. Was there a moment in the last couple of years where you thought, like, wow, I can't believe I'm doing this, or I feel like I've made it because I'm doing this thing?
Oh, yeah, a lot of the time. We've got to do some really incredible things. I mean, even just touring around the world. So, you know, especially from Australia, it's like everything feels so far and huge. And, you know, being on a tour bus, driving around and playing to, like, I don't know, I don't even know how many people were there yesterday, but there was a lot. Yeah. And today looks like there's going to be a lot of people, like... Yeah. It's a crazy world that you can like spend all this time writing songs in your little head in your room, and you think you're all alone, and you know you're feeling all this stuff, and then you release it and all these people, you know, on the other side of the world listen to it, and then they turn up to a field and stand and watch you.
Right.
Like, what even is that? It's a weird world that we live in.
I have to imagine too that like playing, I mean, I don't know how much this would mean to you being from Australia, but like here in America, like for a band to play Saturday Night Live, for instance, is like a huge deal. And like, I know you're a Nirvana fan, like Nirvana played on SNL. Like,
yeah.
I mean, was that a significant milestone for you?
Yeah. It was huge. And that, I mean, that was so much fun that day, that night, whatever.
I mean, that's pretty nerve-wracking too, right? Didn't I read that you were getting, that you were sort of ill beforehand?
Yeah, I was ill with nerves. I was like spewing for days.
Did you literally throw up?
Yeah, I was physically unwell. I think I'd also flown, like maybe it was kind of a mixture of jet lag and because I think we flew straight to there and started, you know, it was at the start of a tour, and but yeah, I think I was so nervous. And And even that's, you know, interesting, the way your body kind of reacts to things, like, that you can't, we think we can control so much, but even, you know, a week before my album came out, just recently, exactly 1 week, like the Friday before the release, I was sick. I was like physically, it's like my, all of the nerves in my body of, and me trying to be like, it's fine, it's all good, I can't do anything, you know, I've already recorded it and I can't change anything.
Like, what is the source of the fear in that? Because, like, on SNL, I can understand, yeah. like, you're millions of people and it's a weird thing.
Yeah.
yeah. Is it just fear of how people are going to receive the album, or if they're going to like it, or what is the anxiety
Who
there?
Knows? Because I think I push those things away. It's like, I kind of tell myself that, you know, you can only do, you're only in control of what you can control, and the amount of work I put into it, and you know, the work I do on it. But of course there's those elements of people liking it or disliking yeah. it, like, no matter how much we tell ourselves that that's not a thing that we care about, of course we care about it a little bit,
right?
I guess everyone just has different levels of it. But I mean, even just that kind of, like, popularity aside, I think it's more that vulnerability of people, of just sharing these things with people that I don't even, you know, talk to my closest friends about some stuff. And then I, you know, put all of this energy and all this emotion into songs. And I mean, there's got to be some sort of weird, there's some sort of weird balance of vulnerability.
Well, I was going to say, this record in particular seems maybe more personal in a way. Like, the other thing I noticed, maybe in comparison to some of the other records, is that there's, like, less sort of one-liners on this album. Like, it seems like there's not as much, I mean, there's still humor on the record, but it seems like it's more like, I'm not going to sort of soft pedal what I'm talking about here.
Yeah.
I mean, do you feel like that was a deliberate thing on your part?
Yeah, I just kind of wrote, and I didn't know what I was doing, really. So yeah. I didn't really have any major, you know, plans of how I would talk about things or how I would approach or attack or whatever. But I think I did try to kind of simplify or not lean on, like, you know, old writing tools all the time, or... yeah, like, really kind of condense, or, like, you know, boil ideas down to the bare minimum.
Yeah. You know, one of my favorite songs on the record is the last track, Sunday Roast. And I was blown away when I read that you wrote the melody for that when you were 13. Is
yeah,
that right?
The guitar part.
Because that's a really good melody.
Thanks.
You were good at 13. Like, had you recorded, like, had you played that on a tape or something? Like, how'd you remember that?
Oh, I've always just, like, it's been in my fingers forever. I think I always kind of, when I sit down, I play it. I've probably recorded versions of it along the way. Like, I used to have a tape deck thing that I recorded stuff on. But yeah, I've never been able to put words or a vocal melody to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what made you dig it up now?
I was just playing it when I was writing and something came.
Yeah.
Like an idea for a melody, and lyrics came along, and it, you know, it fit together and it worked, and I think that's just how songs kind of come alive sometimes.
I mean, do you have a lot of bits like that that are just floating around waiting to be finished?
Yeah, okay. I think it's a nice way to be.
Yeah, and do you have, like, other bits from, like, even that far back that you did when you were a kid?
Yeah, probably. I think my memory is so bad, but things always
your memory sounds
jump
amazing.
In and out.
If you remember, I can't remember anything I did when I was 13.
Well, that one just jumps out more than the rest, you know.
Well, you knew it was a good melody. If you can still remember it, it's obviously a good tune.
Yeah.
Was that around the time that you first started writing music?
Yeah, I think I kind of started writing stuff as soon as I started learning how to play it.
And, like, were you always writing lyrics, or was it a music thing first?
Yeah, I wrote poetry, and I probably started writing before I started playing guitar, because, you know, just from school, like, doing poetry in class, or, you know, having to write short stories or that kind of stuff. And I read so much as a kid.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was probably available to me before an instrument was.
Yeah. Hey, did you ever think about being just like a writer of, like, books, poetry?
Oh, yeah.
Do you still think about that?
Oh, yeah, I'll write books one day.
Yeah? Have you written any yet? Like, just like for yourself, or like, are there any like novels in the cupboard that you put away?
Not really novels, but I mean, I just write so much. I write a lot of poetry, and I mean, a lot of my songs kind of start off as poetry. Or I mean, sometimes I can't tell the line between. I think it makes itself known.
Yeah.
at some point, but. Yeah, I mean, I just kind of, I don't dwell on it too much. I just kind of keep working and hope that it'll make itself obvious.
So you feel like at some point in the future, you'll just sort of feel like, okay, this is something I'm going to do now.
Yeah.
Do you have an idea in your mind that you want to do?
No.
You don't have to divulge it?
No.
No.
No. I'm not much of a planner.
I could see you writing a novel. I feel like your songs have, or at least like, you know, maybe a book of short stories or something. I feel like your songs have a story quality to them, a lot of them. I feel like that kind of Raven Carver scenes type thing.
Mm.
But you think you'd lean more towards like the poetry?
Probably.
Side?
I don't know.
I was talking with Joe from the band Rolling Blackouts.
Mm-hmm.
Fever.
Yeah.
Australian. Do you know those guys?
Yeah. Oh, not really. But we saw him at a festival recently.
Okay.
They're Australian. Right?
They're Australian. Yeah, yes. Yeah. That's why I'm bringing them up. I always have to bring up other Australians when I'm talking to Australians. But no, he was talking about how, because they just did their first tour of America.
Yeah.
And talking about how amazing that was, and also the weirdness of it. And I mean, I know you've played here a lot over the last 3 or 4 years. So you spent a lot of time here, but you're still someone who's visiting here. And it's a very weird time, obviously, the last couple of years. And, you know, you touch on some of the weirdness on your record. But I'm always curious, like, when people visit here and they have sort of the outsider perspective, like, what is your take on America? if that's not a big enough question for you. But, like, just the vibe here right now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a big question, obviously, a lot to unpack. But I love... I love America. I think for starters, I always had such a different idea of what it was in my head as a kid, and it being so far away, and it's very kind of movie based and Hollywood based, and then to get given the chance to travel around, and you know, when we've done a lot of touring in America, which I'm really grateful for, and we started off doing a whole lot of driving. You know, big days driving in a small van, and really just seeing how different how different the landscape is, and just meeting, like, playing in all these different towns and states, and meeting all the, just kind of recognizing how different and amazing it is. I mean, yeah, there's lots of really terrible stuff going on, but I think that a lot of the time, the overall, and it's, the other thing is, it's hard to tell because we're in our bubble of, music, and the people, I imagine the people who come to my shows are like-minded, slightly, you know,
not many
politically,
mega hats here, probably.
Yeah, politically on my side, and, or, you know, within that kind of, so you can kind of, I guess, feel like you kind of, you know, speak like preaching to your own kind of team, which is a good thing. But maybe I just don't have as much of a I don't come into contact with the people that are like, you know, the other side. But the most kind of, I don't know, I pick up a real beautiful sense of hope and optimism and love a lot of the time from people, and I think that you know, is at least a step in the right direction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
mean, do people back home ever ask you, like, what the hell is going on in America? Like, when you're, you know.
Yeah, but it's so, I mean, it's like within your own, you know, proximity of what's around you, and all you can really do is, you know, be nice
right.
to the people you meet and, like, and do that kind of groundwork of you know, what, just within the space you touch, you know, if everyone did that, then at least that's a start to everything being better.
Right.
Instead of, you know, when we think no one's watching and then we do the terrible things and then that kind of, you know, everything just escalates and, yeah.
I mean, do you feel like music can play a role in improving the world in that way? Like, do you have those sort of ideals with your own music?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those, like, it's just a constant thought that's in my head of, I think I've always been one of those, you know, trying to figure out the purpose of existing, and I think everyone probably deals with that in their own way, but, yeah, I mean, I'm on the fence a lot of the time between thinking that music is this really incredible and magical thing, and then other days I'm like, what is the point of it? What
right.
does it do? It doesn't achieve anything. It doesn't fix, you know, it doesn't fix, like, starvation and homelessness
right.
and it doesn't do anything. But then the extreme other end of it is that, you know, it does something that I just can't explain in intellectual
right.
words.
Man, I always feel like at worst music is a great distraction. And maybe
yeah.
maybe I guess people would say that we shouldn't be distracted, but sometimes you do need a release from
yeah.
things that are going on in the world, and to just appreciate something beautiful
yeah.
for like 40 minutes is a nice thing to do.
Yeah, I think that's a nice way to put it. I think that watching music, or like watching a show, for example, like an hour and a half show, I think it should be a mix of somewhere between total abandon from the world and your world and all your worries and whatever, but then at the same time, like a total microscope on those same things.
Yeah.
And, you know, experiencing that kind of compassion and gratefulness for, I guess, what you even have in the first place, you know, and matched up to what you're worrying about. And, I mean, it puts a whole lot into perspective.
Well, it's like one of the only times that you're ever with a group of strangers in a place
yeah.
and you're all sort of in the same,
yeah.
you know, headspace. Like, we all love this thing, so we can share it.
Yeah.
I mean, do you feel like playing shows does that for you? Like, you know, makes
yeah.
you feel better in the world, or just traveling around?
Yeah, I think I've gotten, my kind of relationship with performing over time has changed. I think I've often in the past been so kind of nervous about performing and not being able to focus on the moment, and now it's quite a kind of just a really physical and emotional thing which I can't experience any other way, and I feel like everything in the world that I ever think about somehow makes sense in the minutes of performing, but then and I can't explain it, but then when I'm off stage it's gone again.
Well, I was gonna say, like, you know, you seem like a very sort of introspective, unassuming person in conversation, but when you're on stage, like, are you aware that you have, like, a lot of swagger on stage? Like,
swagger?
Yeah, you do. You've got, like, the thing that you want, like, the rock and roll singer to have. You've got the vibe. Are you feeling yourself up there? When you, like, do you sense that, like, does something come over when you strap the guitar on?
I think it depends on the day. I think it depends where my head is. Yeah. Like, sometimes I feel like, you know, the least deserving person to be in that place. Or, you know, just, I think it's always so different. Some days, you know, I feel really lucky and I feel confident, and then other times I think, you know, everyone's having a terrible time and what am I doing up here? And
yeah.
So it's always, I never quite know where it comes from, but
yeah.
I think that's just your own kind of brain doing weird things.
One thing I want to talk to you about is just what it's like to be in a relationship with another songwriter. And this is on my mind because yesterday I interviewed Amanda Shires. I don't know if you've ever listened to her, but she's a great singer-songwriter. She's married to Jason Isbell.
Oh, cool.
And
yeah.
They play in each other's bands, they play in each other's records. And she talked about how, like, they will act as an editor for the other one. Like, someone will play a song and they'll be like, no, that second verse is bad, you gotta rewrite that. And she was saying it was, like, a really helpful thing. Because I was actually wondering, like, is it ever strange to be in the same career as your partner, because sometimes it can be competitive if it's in that situation. And I'm just like, with you and Jen, you know, Jen is a great singer-songwriter as well. Do you have, like, that editor partnership type thing? Is it ever competitive, weird? Like, what's that like being in a relationship?
I think
someone?
In the past, when we were writing around each other, it's weird because songwriting is such a kind of vulnerable and personal space, so, and we didn't really share that much, to be honest. I guess sometimes we couldn't avoid it because we were writing in the same space and overheard each other, but I think it's nice having that person to kind of, that complete, or that trust or honesty. I don't. Yeah.
So it's not like you're not critiquing each other's
songs.
No, so
I think that we always have just kept it kind of separate, because it's hard. You don't want to hear that from anyone, even like the person that you know. We would be like, be honest, be completely honest, because people are never honest with things like songwriting, because it's so personal, so
right.
They don't want to hurt your feelings, so they're like, oh, it's good, that's really that's a really good song.
Yeah.
So yeah, you know, in the past when we were writing, Jen and I were like, just be totally honest if you think something's really tacky or but then when they are, you're like, shut up. What do you know, like,
right.
I don't want to hear that,
right?
So it's I think sometimes you just need the time to I think I prefer just my own time and distance from ideas, and then, you know, you come back and something that you thought was really bad yesterday
yeah.
might actually be kind of good, and vice versa.
Well, it
you never
like
know.
Like you were saying before, you kind of like ruminate on bits for a while, it sounds like.
Yeah.
You've got things, it's like, oh, I like, talk about, say it looks pretty,
yeah.
sounds like a song you started, you know,
oh, yeah.
many years ago and just finished.
Yeah, sometimes songs just need distance.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's because you can't get any further.
Yeah.
But other times I think, yeah, it's like they just, I think they just take time. They take time for me.
Yeah. Well, I think the great thing about your songs is that they don't seem like you've spent 7 or 8 years writing it.
Yeah.
They seem like you're just sort of singing them in the moment.
Yeah.
You know, there's just the conversational quality of your songs, which is
yeah.
what makes them so great. So what I'm saying is, it sounds like you're not trying at all in your songs. That's what I'm saying. No, of course not. But you're obviously working really hard and you're doing great. So congratulations with everything. And thanks for letting me on your bus.
No worries.
I appreciate it.
It's cool in here.
Yes, it is. I'll let you get back to reading.
Thanks.
All right, take care. All right, so that was me and Courtney Barnett getting into it, hanging out, talking, having a pretty good time. I think she's, again, a little guarded, but I think we warmed up. It's always fun to talk to her, and I
really am excited to see what she does next. Guys, thanks again for listening to this week's episode. Got to give a shout out to Derek Madden, our producer. Thanks for making everything happen, Derek.
Thank you.
Also, shout out to Josh Copperman, who wrote our theme song. Thank you, Josh, for doing that. And of course, thank you to you, the listener, for listening to this podcast. You make us possible. You are the ones who sustain us. So thank you so much for your support. And thanks for talking about us and leaving comments on iTunes and telling your friends about us and talking about us on social media. Please keep doing that. It is what propels us forward. Guys, thanks again for listening and checking out this week's episode. We will talk to you again next week.
On the Westwood One Podcast Network. John brings his skewed sense of humor. Jeff brings tips to cut strokes off your next round. Together, it's those weekend golf guys.
They'll pay a lot of money to PXG and Titleist and Callaway and on and on and on, right? How many yards do you think you're going to pick up with that extra driver? I think I can get an extra 5 to 10. What if I give you 15 to 20? You pay me more.
Jeff Smith, right? Teaches on a sliding scale.
Those weekend golf guys, the podcast, part of the Believe Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen.